We all know that every great movie has an extended chase sequence, but what if a movie were all chase sequences? You'd have Maximum Risk, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with three Christmas ghosts of movies past. Me and Robin Hitchcock.
Hi.
And Camila Adams.
Hello.
Welcome to 2020. We did it. A decade ended.
We're recording this in 2019, full disclosure, so we're making some assumptions. So,
we don't know yet. Knock on wood.
Yeah. A lot could happen. And like you say, what's really going to happen? Do you have a news app on your phone? A lot can happen.
In the next 48 hours. As,
if you're hearing this, we made it, guys.
Right.
Woo!
Remember like November of 2016 when you were like, 2020's never going to get here. It did.
Surprise.
How about that? We're here to talk about movies. And in the, you know, we started our first year with Sharky's Machine.
Yes.
A bizarre action spectacle with a rugged man.
So it's only fitting
that Jean-Claude Van Damme ushers us into 2020. Before we get to the facts, general reactions to having experienced this.
I am so excited to talk about this ridiculous movie.
I keep forgetting like my little notebook where I write things as I'm watching it.
Right.
It's okay. It was just a list of questions. It was like, whose funeral are we at?
Right.
What?
Right. That there has to be a missing scene there.
This is the only movie in the history of time that has a shot of a dead guy, and then we cut to a funeral, and it's in somebody else's funeral,
and it's just fully unrelated. All right, let's. Can I do the plot recap?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Because,
yes.
Because I have further theories about the funeral.
Partially because we should tell people, no one's seen this. No. We should tell people what the hell we're talking about. And partially because I watched it 2 days ago. I have no idea what the hell happens in this movie.
Me either.
So here's Robin Hitchcock with this week's 60-second recap.
We open on Jean-Claude Van Damme in a foot chase, which becomes a car chase and like a fruit cart, a literal fruit cart. And then, oh my God, the star of the movie dies. What? But then we see Jean-Claude Van Damme at a funeral. Whose funeral? And it's not for himself. And he doesn't know his own dead self. It turns out he is a secret twin brother who moved to the U.S. and got mixed up in the Russian mob, hence getting murdered. So Jean-Claude Van Damme goes to the U.S., gets a wacky cabbie killed, steals his dead brother's girlfriend, kicks a bunch of guys in the best bathhouse fight scene that isn't in John Wick or Eastern Promises.
I was going to say.
Goes back to France, more car chases, opens his brother's safe deposit box full of evidence and cash, more car chases, explosions, a chainsaw fight in a butcher shop, and then he walks off into the sunset. 4 stars.
Because it's a success. 55 seconds. I know I won't remember later. So were those towels also underpants?
Yes.
How did those towels stay on?
Well, did you notice that Jean's towel was considerably shorter than everybody else's?
Yeah, yes. He's got nice legs.
He had a hand towel, and yes, you saw like they were underpants underneath there.
They connected at the bottom.
Yes.
It was a towel that was also shorts.
It was diapy.
Just for sauna purposes.
That's not a bad idea.
No.
I guess not. I was curious as to why the scene happened. Because they're not in the sauna when they're first all naked towels.
He meets him like, let's talk. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme is immediately like, well, I'll take off my clothes then. As a sign of trust.
I mean, I understand it like this mafioso kind of way, shape, or form. But originally, he rolls in there. They're all in the dining room in their towels, mm-hmm. and then they go to the sauna.
I just remembered there's also a fight in a sauna in GoldenEye, right?
There is.
Yes, there
between
is.
GoldenEye and Oh Girl.
So I'd put this at 3 on sauna fight scene movies.
I agree.
I think Eastern Promises is number 1 because
that was dope.
It's the one with the full nudity.
A lot of full nudity.
Yeah.
The John Wick scene is like...
It's brief.
But it's like the best scene in any movie ever.
Okay.
So
that's John Wick 1?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, to be fair... I have never seen Eastern Promises, but I have seen the fight scene. So it's possible it's better in context.
It's one of those scenes that helps teach people about shrinkage. It's like, no, it would look really small if you were fighting to the death. It would hide. Anyway.
Unless that was your thing.
And maybe. Anyway.
So here's my theory about the funeral. There's two possibilities. Mm-hmm. One is that originally they were going to open on the main character, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
Whose name I forget.
Mm-hmm.
French. And maybe establish his relationship with this dead person.
Right.
And that got cut. That's mm-hmm. one theory. The second theory is that they wanted you, because like you said, normally in movies, like mm-hmm. the language of movies, when somebody dies and you cut to a funeral, mm-hmm. it's their funeral.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Very well used in that one episode of Buffy.
I was thinking about
yes.
that.
Right. But then they maybe were planning to like cut to Jean-Claude Van Damme's face over the casket and for it to be like, what?
Right.
But incompetent editing made it not have that effect.
A bunch of people just stopped caring halfway through.
Which sounds about right.
I will give the facts because I think there are two that explain a lot about what happened here.
Jean-Claude Van Damme's mom financed this thing?
It's like when Don Trump Jr. buys boxes of his own book.
Right. Somewhere in Eastern Europe, there are 800,000 Van Dammes. They all bought 12 tickets. It was released September 13th, 1996, the 25th number one film of the year, and won its debut weekend with only $5.6 million. It grossed $14.5 million overall, so it is not among the top 100 movies of 1996.
So, I mean, were there no other movies released that year?
What happened that weekend?
There wasn't a lot going on that weekend, so it snuck to number one, but it disappeared immediately. So it's only the 104th highest grossing film of 1996. Independence Day Twister and Mission Impossible were the top three. So how can a number one movie not be one of the top 100 movies of the year if it dies immediately? It fell to fourth in its second weekend behind the debuting First Wives Club at number one. $2.9 million in its second weekend, ninth in its third weekend, and 15th in its fourth weekend, after which it completely vanished. So it had one kind of big weekend without a lot of competition and then was gone. It did manage to win that first weekend with some competition. It narrowly beat Fly Away Home with then-recent Oscar winner Anna Paquin. Jeff Bridges is her dad, and they have to help some geese.
Okay.
It's a live-action...
Sure.
Isn't it Jeff Daniels?
Might have been. I always say the wrong name.
Some Jeff.
It's probably Jeff Daniels. That's way more believable than Jeff Bridges.
It's some Jeff.
Earned $4.7 million, so almost was on our list instead of Maximum Risk. Fly Away Home would finish ahead of Maximum Risk all of the following weekends, and overall, it made $25 million. There was another new wide release that day as well. It was called The Rich Man's Wife, a domestic thriller with Halle Berry.
Oh, I saw that.
It opened in fifth and only earned $8.5 million for its full run, even lower on the year-end chart than Maximum Risk. Fact one that I think helps explain this. This is not the only movie where Jean-Claude Van Damme plays separated twins.
What? That's right. In the other one... They're both characters, though. They fight each other and then become friends.
1991's Double Impact was about two twins whose parents are murdered and they're split up to go to different homes, but then eventually avenge their parents' death. It debuted at number 2 behind the second weekend of Hot Shots! Exclamation point, but was a bigger hit than Maximum Risk, earning more than $30 million. I think he was like, that worked. Let's do it again.
Okay.
And that was the inciting incident by Maximum Risk. I like playing two people, he said. It's the third. This is the third number one Jean-Claude Van Damme vehicle after 1994's Time Cop, which won for 2 weeks, and The Quest from earlier in 1996, which is also directed by Jean-Claude
Van
Damme.
Which I own on DVD. And when this movie ended, I've never. When I say I mean my husband Colin Diedrich owns, and it's because
we're gonna throw him under the bus. Right?
I'm going to go one step further.
Full government name right there.
I'm going to go one step further. His best friend Jen gave him a whole bunch of those like double feature super cheap DVDs with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Bruce Willis, and because they love watching bad action movies together.
That's nice.
So that's why we own that on DVD. And I, as soon as this movie ended, I was like, I'm going to watch The Quest soon. Like, I've got a lot of, well, I have a lot of 2019 to catch up on.
I'm super curious about what happens when he's also fully in charge instead of just spiritually. But there were two number one Jean-Claude Van Damme movies in 1996. This one, Maximum Risk, would be his final until The Expendables 2, much, much later. No one needs to feel bad for Jean-Claude Van Damme's career, but it is worth pointing out that he's missed two opportunities that would be the two defining things in his career if he hadn't missed them. He was originally cast as the Predator in Predator.
I don't understand that, because I saw that too.
Yeah.
Later in that same Wikipedia article, it talks about how he was high on cocaine for the entire filming of Maximum Risk.
Yep.
Seems about right. Yep. Wait, but no, it doesn't, because that motherfucker... Oh, sorry. There was like zero emotion in his face at any point in time in this film.
But there was a lot in the veins on his head. That's what you had to read. He was cast as the Predator.
But was he going to be recognizable?
He was wearing a suit. That was one of the... No, it was after Bloodsport. This was...
It's like a waste.
This was one of the problems he had with it. He was like why am I in a suit the whole thing?
Right. It's like Lupita in Star Wars. Waste it?
Right, exactly.
It just didn't look right. Like, he was doing martial arts in the Predator suit, and it just looked silly because here's like a relatively small, lithe Predator next to Arnold and Jesse Ventura and the rest of the cast, and just looked silly, and he hated it, so he bailed.
Wow.
Good for him. I don't think that should define his career.
No, we have standards, JCVD.
Also, the video game Mortal Kombat was supposed to be a Jean-Claude Van Damme game. But
really? Wait, what?
Mortal Kombat was developed as a vehicle for Jean-Claude Van Damme, the character Johnny Cage from the first.
No.
Mortal Kombat was supposed to be Jean-Claude Van Damme. They started developing it before he signed on, and then he was like tied to some other video game deal with Sega and bailed out, and they kept going.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
My jaw's on the floor.
Yeah. That's not the fact that explains it. Here's the fact that explains Maximum Risk. Maximum Risk had an uncredited rewrite by Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer, known for movies like Date Movie, Epic Movie, Disaster Movie, the people who do the
worst
spoofs
movies
that are regularly regarded as the worst films ever made. One of their first break was Spy Hard with Leslie Nielsen, which also nobody likes. Mm. But then after that, when they were kind of floating around for projects, one thing was they did an uncredited rewrite of Maximum Risk. And I wrote down early in the movie, like, you can't convince me this isn't a bad comedy. Like, there's too much ridiculous stuff that happens. I think that, you know, whatever Jean-Claude Van Damme's intentions or the original writer's intentions were with Maximum Risk got filtered to these, like, hacks who tried to do funny things and fail, and this is the result.
All right, well, there you go. That's the podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. No, there's so much. There's so much going on here. You mentioned the fruit cart. That's the only brilliant moment in the entire movie.
There's so many brilliant moments
because
in this movie.
The old cliche is that you run into a fruit cart. Let's. We'll do you one better. He's gonna drive the fruit cart.
You know what? Let me take this cart.
I would argue that there are several more brilliant moments.
Oh my, please.
May I direct you to the chainsaw fight in the butcher shop where Paul Benvictor.
It's not even the climax. If you're thinking that has to be the last. Nope.
No. There's so much more.
Right. Paul Benvictor, who plays one of the bad FBI agents, gets shot. He gets killed, but doesn't let go of the chainsaw and cuts a pig carcass in half in his death throes. And then once he finally collapses, gets hit in the face with a swinging pig hat.
Yes.
Okay, I love that.
No, that was good.
Cinema.
I barely even have any notes for this movie because I was kind of for the simple fact, none of us had heard of this movie, first of all.
Which is reasonable.
Right. And then I go to rent and there's like 34% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm like, how did this make it to number one?
This isn't the best movie I've seen recently that starts with the word Maximum, because I watched Maximum Overdrive and that was a little better.
Worse than Maximum Overdrive?
Maximum Overdrive is way more watchable. Like, I fell asleep twice during Maximum Risk.
I liked this movie.
Wow. Okay. This is going to be an upset.
This like, really starting 2020 off with controversy.
It is bad. Okay. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but it is so fun.
No.
I guess you fell asleep. I don't know. I love car chases. There's
there were like a lot of them. There are like eight.
There are so many.
Car chases aplenty.
And it's also just so silly. It's-
I was like stuck on the mob boss. He was the boss from Fight Club. And so I'm like, how is this?
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't take him seriously. You were non-threatening.
And that was when it the whole thing ground to a halt for me. Because like that was at the point in the movie where...
when he dies horribly?
Yeah, where it's trying to establish, okay, it is not the mob. It's not the FBI. It is rogue bad guys within those two organizations. The organizations are after Jean-Claude Van Damme, but the actual bad things are not going on by those organizations. They're going on with splinter cells in those organizations who want Jean-Claude Van Damme for slightly different reasons. Like, can we streamline this?
Yeah.
It was exhausting.
Unnecessarily complicated.
I have a few more questions.
Oh, please.
No.
Okay, first of all, well,
How did no one notice that fire? That's mine. they're walking into an. Sorry, I'm stealing, but now I have to bring it up. They're going to see somebody, a lawyer of some kind, and they walk until they get to the door. Everything appears fine. They open the door. And a towering inferno.
Blaze, like,
that no what? One else in this entire office complex.
Nobody smelled it. Nobody felt it. Nothing was falling and burning. Like, just sound. Like, doo-doo-doo. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and see this. Holy shit, it's a fire.
An active volcano that is invisible.
Also, especially for a movie that later uses setting off a sprinkler system with one cigarette.
And I was just, are you sure? I don't think that's going to.
What MacGyver-ass request is it to turn to a bank employee and say, can I have a cigarette and some gum? And have him go,
sure.
Yeah, that's very reasonable for the current business at hand.
Right. Yes, as you're looking through your safe deposit box, and I will shut the door behind me. No problems. Feel free to smoke away.
Also, this might be real life, but I did think it was interesting that Jean-Claude Van Damme gets a private room to open his safe deposit box, but then the schmo bad guy has to go in a little, like, cubby.
Oh, that seems fair.
Yeah, it might be how much you pay.
Maybe. Maybe
also,
he had a bigger
box. How did we as a society just accept the fact that banks... legitimate businesses hold people's shit for them without looking at it?
I have no idea. Like, I don't know how safety deposit boxes actually work.
I was gonna say maybe that's only in the movies,
right?
Like, movies give you the impression that not even the police can go, that's the super secret, nothing can happen, and if I die it goes, you know.
Yeah, that's just it. Like, it's a bank employee and the person who's paying for the box, they each have a key.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And they're supposed, according to movies, they open them at the same time.
Hey, if any of our listeners work in a bank.
Or have a safety deposit box, let us know how this shit works.
Okay, so one of my questions, speaking of him showing up at the bank and saying, hey, I'd like to open my safe deposit box, he was still impersonating his brother at that point, right?
Yes.
It's confusing. Anyway, he is mistaken for his brother over and over again. Mm-hmm. He has a thick Belgian accent, and his brother has an American accent with a little European twinge.
Right.
So why does no, why, including his girlfriend?
Right. Well, she basically, like, I don't think she let him talk for, like, the first hour they were together. Her tongue was down his throat.
That's one of the highlights, because she walks up, and she's like, Mikhail, and he thinks about it for a minute. Yes.
Yep.
I am Mikhail. Correct.
Mikhail is I. I is Mikhail.
And they had a scene establishing that by happenstance at this bank, the only security procedures are things that your brother would know. It's like, who are you and what's your mother's maiden name? Okay, it's yours.
Okay, and then my next general question mm-hmm. is, do what, twins being separated, is this another thing like safe deposit boxes that only exist in the movies? I mean, I guess there was that documentary.
There was a documentary. Mm-hmm. I guess it has, it probably doesn't happen as often these days.
Right.
I think, but, you know, probably around the time when adoption was like, you know, considered so taboo. Or
right.
Like when kids would get knocked up at 16, just, they send them off somewhere.
I'll keep one of them?
And I don't even remember what the reason was behind this.
She's like, I only had resources for one.
That's my favorite line in the movie, because then he says, and you picked me.
She's like,
and
no,
then,
I owned it.
And then she says, no. And I'm like, that was cold.
Which, I gotta say,
I didn't pick you.
I particularly liked that because I have a cat named Gigu, and I picked out Gigu in air quotes. Because I went to, you know, there was a whole litter of kittens, and it was basically like me and five other people picking up cats and separating them at birth. And they said, which one do you want? And I was like, how does one choose? They're all identical cats. And so I said, whichever one is closest to you.
And so that was a similar story.
Correct.
From Mikhail and his brother.
All of Gigu's litter mates are now in the Russian mob.
I feel the same way about professors' brothers and sisters are probably the same.
The odds that, and then this, the whole movie turns on this brother leaving detailed instructions and everything for his long lost brother who he has no connection. Like,
right.
Was because there no was, one else in your life?
He said he was motivated to leave his life of crime by I don't know how he found out that he has a brother.
Yeah, that wasn't
clear. But
it was
literally like, when I found out that I had a brother, it mm-hmm. meant someone
Five
could love
ago.
Me. And
old
so,
girl seemed like she was all about, like
she loved him, mm-hmm. but not enough to not immediately hook up with his brother.
Right. She waited like the 48 hours to go ahead.
I do have to say that, God forbid, if something should happen to Colin, and he happened to have
an identical brother,
identical twin brother. He does have
you'd
a twin,
like, you know what,
sister, and but,
and you're still like, there's so we could be here for 2 minutes or 8 days on the sex scene. Oh my
very
god,
very cringy sex.
Whoa.
Scene. Although, nice thighs, Jean-Claude.
Yeah, I mean, well done on the thighs, and he does have a very high, tight booty.
Yeah.
She mentioned when she hugs her, you've gotten harder since the last time I saw you.
That's an actual line. Someone wrote that, someone read it and go, no, keep that. And then someone else asked a professional to say it. You've gotten harder since the last time I saw you.
I feel like that's a good segue into this movie's on Crackle. You can watch it right now. Crackle's an ad-supported streaming service, and I was watching Postcards from the Edge in the middle of the night at one of the ads on Crackle for this 1990, mm-hmm. Lady movie. It's a great movie. It's about Carrie Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, was for what medication or some kind of treatment for if your dick is bent?
I didn't get that one. I wonder why that's targeted to you and not me.
Right. The ad is a bunch of dudes, older men, mm-hmm. holding slightly bent phallic objects like zucchinis bananas.
Stop it right
and
now.
Then it's like, does this, there's no normal erection, but if yours is more bent than you'd like, use this Dick straightening treatment.
I didn't know this was a problem. Now I got to worry about that.
You do.
No, the highlight, the crackle highlight for me in Maximum Risk. One of the other ones that's free but better, like Tubi, I think.
Tubi's
like,
good.
But like puts a countdown, like there's an ad starting in 5 seconds. You know, like it. But on Crackle, it is out of nowhere and it is jarring. And one of the breakpoints was the last second of the sex scene. So like, I think the sex scene is going on and literally Natasha moaned loudly and in the same second of time a cricket ad was happening. Like passion.
That's
hey!
What happens every time you come, a cricket ad.
Somehow this made Maximum Risk better, that every 6 minutes I had to be reminded about what's on sale at Target. I was like, yeah, okay, fine.
I ended up spending money to rent it because I didn't have enough time to watch it on Crackle.
I paid
the
$4. Yep. Fine, whatever.
Somewhere they're like, hey, Maximum Risk made $8 this month.
It's going to end up on Amazon Prime like Invasion
right,
USA did.
Right, exactly.
Oh, my God. I mean, anything to... Natasha Henstridge...
is present.
Yeah. She sure I don't is. Have much to say about her. I liked that there were like 18 different mid-level henchmen.
Yeah, there was. I have a note here that apparently someone tried to get artistic and creative in mm-hmm. this because there was an overkill on playing with reflections throughout this thing.
Yeah.
When he's looking at
himself,
because
he has a twin.
Right, the plane mm-hmm. window, the dude's glasses, like that was a stretch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and then like the broken mirror when he's beating the dude to death.
The cabbie, like why? What is
cabbie,
this?
So unnecessary.
It felt like a backdoor pilot.
This is the Better Call Saul. Is there going to be a spinoff about everything leading up to that cabbie meeting Jean-Claude Van Damme?
It'd have to be a prequel.
Because like the 8 lines of coke that he did before he picked him up because he was off the charts.
I can find a penguin in a sandstorm.
And why does Jean-Claude Van Damme or whoever's actually responsible for this movie think that's a thing that cabbies do?
I have no idea. I've never.
Wait, what do you mean? Like act wacky?
No, they're also like go for like a concierge
to
the world.
Yeah.
Go find Alex Bohemian for me. How am I supposed to do that?
Oh, that was also hilarious. This guy is in a serious relationship with this woman and he still has the like Tim coffee right. shop.
Like when you put someone in your phone.
Yes,
exactly.
Like Becky from the club.
Right.
So you've been with her for months.
So you have to be reminded where you met her, where she's from. Alex from Starbucks, Alex from the Bohemian. Just to be safe.
I do want to circle back to what Sean said in our previous episode, the bonus mm-hmm. episode about all or nothing with nudity. Mm-hmm. This movie went very nothing in the one strip club scene. Mm-hmm. It was like the world's tamest strip club where everyone has a full covered bra on.
I don't think I even noticed that there was a strip club scene.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But then her titties come out later before the cricket ad.
And it was Chekhov's titties because when she takes her shirt off in the first thing, there's like a long, slow close-up like, don't worry, we'll get back to them.
Chekhov's titties.
And then, that's a serious literary reference. But that scene, like, they had sex in the bathroom with the two FBI guys who were sharing a bed for some reason.
You know what reason.
That's another movie.
They keep looking over at the door.
Yes, they are fucking in the bathroom, guys.
My
you know
God.
That's exactly what's happening.
I don't know. I like none of the iconic Jean-Claude Van Damme movies I've seen. Is this generally how they go?
I've seen one, maybe. I think I saw Time Cop.
Time Cop is one of the more normal of his movies. One of his more
is that
like,
the one with the splits?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's the one I saw.
But like, as much as a movie about time travel can be, like, it feels like a real movie.
Right.
Right? they're like this, mostly.
Okay, well.
I haven't seen it, but have either of you seen JCVD?
I have. It's not as good as I want it to be.
Oh, okay.
It's such a great premise.
Right.
The actual movie's kind of bad.
Okay.
Yeah. So, are Are we gonna rate it?
I mean, like, sure. Again, you could go to every scene in the movie and go, why? What? Hi, but you know, we can move on.
Yeah, I watched it from beginning to end, and it still felt like I was dropped in the middle of something. Like, I don't know what's happening.
I want to find I went quiet there because I was trying to find the thing about the original titles, because this movie had
the title means nothing.
This movie had
Triple Frontier.
This movie had three titles, and none of them made a lick of sense. Like they went through three rounds of this.
Because yes, there was. I don't feel like there was maximum risk taken at any point in this film.
Maybe that fruit cart. Somebody's chasing me in a real car. I'm gonna get in this fruit cart.
Yeah. The maximum risk was the film in itself.
It was filmed as The Exchange. They thought that was too subtle, so they pitched Bloodstone, which...
What? What a great title!
To the point where there were early Variety ads with this poster saying Bloodstone. And they settled on Maximum Risk. Like, what?
What is... Sure. Fine.
Part of it is, it was also filmed that he was a hitman. And then, halfway through, they were like, you know what? Actually, he's a policeman.
What?
And I read...
So who was his partner?
I read somewhere that the funeral was for a fellow policeman who died.
He does say it's Captain So-and-so.
Unnecessary.
I'm only going to get more confused.
Right.
I got to say, though, I thought that the partner, really cool guy.
Yeah, I felt...
I love it when...
When he was on screen, I felt like it was a real movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. I love it when actors make the most of completely thankless roles. Like
right.
That. The one moment when Jean-Claude Van Damme pulls him out of the burning van,
yeah.
And then he's catching his breath, and he just says, thank you. I was like, what a great guy. Moment, right?
I like the one henchman who was really trying really hard. I don't know what his character name or actor name. I was
the
just
blonde
calling,
guy?
I was calling him Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was good. This isn't my lowest ranked movie. I'll tell
close.
You.
It's scraping.
I gave it a 31.
Damn. That's generous.
I was like,
Jesse, wait.
This is not as good as While You Were Sleeping. So it made me feel a little better about While You Were Sleeping.
Forget you, Sean.
Now I'm leaving Robin for last. Mm-hmm. Camila?
19.
Not your lowest ever, but certainly in I think it might be your third lowest ever, other than Halloween and Divergent. Mm. And Private Parts.
Private Parts.
So
yes.
I will not be hitting the average this week.
Snap.
I liked this movie exactly as much as Sharky's Machine. So I'm giving it a 63.
Wow.
63.
Wow.
I love a good car chase.
You're going to get a fruit basket from Jean-Claude.
Hi, Jean-Claude.
Thank you, Robin.
Of all the people we've done things about, he's the one that I would be most willing to believe. Just search his Twitter for new podcasts about his films.
I completely agree.
Right? So don't be surprised.
I would do his voice, but I can't. I don't know what that
Where
accent
is. Where is he even
from? He's Belgian.
Okay.
He's the muscles from Brussels.
Bringing us to a dismal average score of 37.6. 37 and two-thirds. Again, way down in the hole. That is just slightly better than Private Parts.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yep. And well below the sum of all fears. Yeah. Yeah. We know what we're doing around here.
we are professionals.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. We have a special edition of sorts because Camila texted with the shocking news that
this
she was
in.
Going to come in and stand up for the underrepresented, downtrodden film Joker with Joaquin Phoenix.
Which I forgot. I knew some. I didn't remember. I knew you had strong feelings, Robin,
yes.
against it.
No, this is.
I'm waiting. I'm so excited to hear why you liked it.
If we were doing an episode on this, this would be the one where we disagree the most because I think it's okay, and Robin hates it, and
okay.
So you like
wow,
it.
Okay.
We're all over the map. All
right. So first of all, I look at it more of a character study.
Sure.
Which is why. Mm-hmm. And I really love origin stories and I really love, documentaries about why and who and when and where. So I think in that sense, when you look at it that way, and also I don't have a lot invested in the canon of Batman
mm-hmm.
and Joker and all that jazz. There are some choices where they alluded that maybe Joker was Batman's brother.
That I literally said out loud, this is dumb.
Right. And I was, and then just the fact that he came face to face with Bruce Wayne.
That no. is when.
And that they're like 35 fucking years apart.
Right.
Okay.
That is when Lauren and I were, we both did the Kamala Harris blink, blink, really sigh.
Which, so yes, it's not without its problems. Yeah. It's not without its kinks, but it's just, I feel like I'm a little more separated, a little more outside of that camp as where I don't care too much about that.
So like when things went, like not minding, you like are willing to overlook choices
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I don't think it was a good choice
yeah.
by any means whatsoever, but I did enjoy his performance so much, it just kind of outshone, it overshadowed that stuff for me.
Okay.
Also and it seemed like more of a commentary on mental health and how it's addressed here in the United States.
Or rather,
it's not addressed yes. here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, yeah. So it was just, there were a lot of things about it that I just really enjoyed. And also, like, maybe I'm a little wacky because I started to laugh at the end where there was a point, I think it should have ended where he's standing on the police car.
Yeah.
And, you know, addressing everybody or whatever. And it's been a minute and coming a little.
That's where I
blurry.
Remember it ending.
No, there's one more scene. He's in a mental hospital and he's being interviewed.
Oh God, yeah,
yeah. So like, it
that's dumb.
Goes a little more in that, and then there was something, and I wish I didn't take notes, and I wasn't really expecting to to address it on air. But there was one scene like close to the end where I just start cracking up laughing, and when he paints his face with the blood, when he smears the blood into the smile on his face, I thought that was beautiful. I don't have like a lot of to back it up West why, but I really enjoyed that.
I'm glad you liked it.
I think we both just turned to Robin like, so what do you got?
No, I mean, I'm totally able to say this is kind of dumb or a bad choice, and yet I still like this movie. I was just in our last episode talking about right. Hustlers, right? But this movie felt like an endless series of those. Mm. Like I kept saying it's interestingly bad,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I definitely was engaged with the movie the whole time, but almost everything I was like, oh, this is dumb. I don't like this. When the banker douches sing a Broadway song and like,
oh.
What? And
see, I just kind of took that as they just came back from seeing whatever. As I was fresh
possible.
In their brain.
Tickets get passed around.
Right.
You're
exactly.
like, we'll go. We'll get drunk beforehand.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
The imaginary girlfriend.
Which.
I hated that.
What I. At first, because I was spending the most of the movie like, there ain't no way in hell she would have. You looked at this motherfucker twice. Because I was. If that been real, that would have been the point. Like, nope. I don't buy it at all. She wouldn't even talk to him in the elevator, let alone let him kiss on her. So when it popped up as to where she was his Tyler Durden, basically,
yeah,
I was like, oh, okay, I can see that.
Yeah,
that and the other thing, we can spoil it now because it's been long enough. Right. The fact that they included Bruce Wayne's parents getting killed. To shout out to
but no pearls.
No. There were pearls.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah. Never mind.
Shout out to our former co-host, Aaron Kleiber, Gone for Not But Not Forgotten. He made an image when, like, two Batman movies ago that was just 9 different scenes of Martha Wayne being shot. Because it's like, how many times? I think it was either Justice League. No, it must have been Batman v Superman. That
probably.
Starts with it. It's like...
Yeah.
You don't need to include this every time.
And they had weirdly famous-ish
yes.
actors,
I
right?
I forget who it was.
It
but-
was Jeffrey Dean Morgan and the woman who is on Walking Dead, Lauren Cohen.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So that was a big waste of a
right?
couple great actors.
What?
Yes, I totally forgot about that
yeah.
scene. I thought, first of all, to me, it explains why fucking Mr. Wayne took his family walking down the middle of an alleyway. In
that
the middle
is
of
a
night.
Very good point.
So that
we never knew why.
That for me was like, all right, now I can see. Now I know completely blame.
But also, did rich people go to the movies in suits and pearls?
What year is it?
It's ambiguously set in the '80s-ish.
I assume this was another fundraiser, like the earlier scene when they're doing it's like a Charlie Chaplin thing that they're all at, and it's a gala. I assumed it was like that.
Why are there so many galas showing old movies?
It's a rough town. There's not that you can't attract, you know, live performers. I agree with all of these scenes being dumb. For me, they were balanced out by from the moment he walks into the TV studio to the end. Scene is perfect.
Yeah.
If the whole movie were as good as that, it would be the best Batman
movie. The actress who plays Dr. Ruth does a really good job of, I just got sexually assaulted face.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's really, really good. I thought it was okay. I thought it was an excellent performance. There are things I liked about it. I don't think it has a lot of substance. It bothers me that, you know, a legion of young men who I won't categorize any further than that are like, this says something, because it doesn't. Mm-hmm. This has nothing to say. This is just a character study with a good performance. Right. But I didn't hate it. Yeah.
I'm charging through Oscar season. Mm-hmm. We mostly talked about this in the last episode, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But did we talk about Waves on air?
No, neither of us have seen it yet.
I do want to... You haven't seen it?
Neither of us had seen it when we recorded the last episode.
You mean an hour ago?
The bonus episode.
We haven't talked about Waves. Okay. It's great.
Right. I saw Waves mostly because on the podcast this had Oscar buzz. Joe Reed made a throwaway comment about his imaginary, if he produced the Oscars, he would have celebrities talk about their favorite movies from the year. And he said, wouldn't it be great to know, like, Ansel Elgort rides for Waves. And I have been thinking about that ever since. And so I had to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very good, but it is 2 hours and 15 minutes of human misery.
Yeah.
And that is difficult. It is also one of the first movies I've seen that made me very aware that the filmmaker is younger than me.
Oh, wow.
There's like a dramatic conclusionist kind of montage with a Radiohead song. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, yeah, he dreamed this up the first time he listened to that song. He said, someday I'm going to put this at the end of my movie. Mm-hmm. And
is it exit music for a film?
It's True Love Waits.
True Love Waits.
But it is a really good movie.
I liked it a lot. It's in my honorable mentions zone. Mm-hmm. It snuck onto my ballot for best supporting actress. And I'm looking up the actress's name.
She's really good. That's the other thing about the movie. So it's sort of half and half. It's like two siblings.
It switches protagonists.
And it switches protagonists. And she is better. So in some ways, it's good that she's second. But it also, you're kind of like, well, why didn't the movie start with her? You know what I mean? It's like, where have you been? We wasted so much movie without you.
Oh, that's messed up.
Taylor Russell is her name. She is mainly known for Lost in Space, as well as being the lead in Escape Room, honorable mentions from 2019.
She's such an adorable little thing.
She was fantastic. And she is not in the conversation for Best Supporting Actress.
It's a shame.
And absolutely should have been. It is a very showy, offy movie. We talked about this is one where the aspect ratio keeps changing. That is a detail of filmmaking so obscure that even people who go to the movies a lot do not know what you're talking about when you start talking about aspect ratio. Right. Literally the shape of the frame. Like switches at key moments, like it'll be square,
it
then it'll be really long, okay, then it'll slowly get wider over the course of 20 minutes.
I've seen it in a couple films.
It works.
It absolutely works. Okay. It's really,
it shouldn't
really
work
good.
And it does.
It's not jarring.
No, it is jarring, but it's jarring.
It's
when
good jarring.
When the narrative is jarring.
Okay.
And
that's the other thing, is that this movie definitely builds a sense of dread, mm-hmm, in a way that I have not felt in a while, such that I had this moment where I was like, should I go run to the bathroom and read the plot summary? Like, it's a horror movie. I did not do that, but I thought about doing it.
Is it like Requiem for a Dream? Is it
yes.
That? Oh, Jesus.
I guess it has a, it has a happy ending.
Okay.
Then Requiem for a Dream. Low bar, but it clears it. But it's beautiful. It is a very well performed, you know, it's heartbreaking, but beautifully heartbreaking. I absolutely recommend it. I don't think it's really getting seen.
Ansel Elgort not doing his job.
Not riding hard enough for Waves.
Dear Ansel.
Jumanji, No, it's not okay that Jack Black does that voice. That's okay. All I got.
What?
He does a black scent.
So what I don't want to do is like, let me bring this up and then let the one black person on the panel address it. So if you saw the first Jumanji, not the first, the second Jumanji,
right?
There's these four kids that get dropped into these characters. In that movie, they all got dropped into racially matching characters. This time,
sort of,
almost. I mean, whatever that kid is, and whatever The Rock is,
I think that kid's white.
No, he's like Middle Eastern of some kind.
Okay,
yeah, I think so.
Everybody Spencer. Is white in Hereditary.
And The Rock is.
Black and Samoan.
Okay. Anyway, in this movie, the tall black kid gets dropped into Jack Black, and so he's gotta, like, you can feel him trying to like imitate that guy without putting on, and right. it for a second, minor spoilers. So there's like, they keep switching. There's lots of like, and I was they're this character, now from, I'm this character. Okay. So for a second, Karen Gillan has to be that guy. And she actually comes close to being like, she doesn't really do anything but it was very, very brief. Mm. With Jack Black, I'm like, no.
I saw the trailer right after we recorded the episode where Camila was like, I'm okay with Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder. And I was like, Camila has spoken for all black people. Case closed. So
apparently they asked Kevin Hart and Kevin Hart said, it's okay.
Well, Kevin Hart's
come on!
And you get paid like a shit ton of money.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's okay.
Yeah. You know the sequel that you're going to make millions of dollars for? Right. Are you okay with this choice we've made?
He's like, what? Come.
Mm-hmm. For our listening audience, Camila was miming counting money.
It's not the end of the world, but it would have been really easy when everyone's jumping between bodies. It would have been really easy to avoid that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think so. And you know what? I don't recall what that kid sounded like in the first one. So like, I don't recall him like really. Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak on it without having seen it, but I doubt it was done tastefully. I doubt it was done as well as RDJ.
No, I'm sure not.
What?
Other than that, it's just not that worth seeing it. It won the weekend. Good. It's a number one movie in America. It gets to sneak in before Star Wars. It wasn't terrible. It's like your family really wants to go to the theater.
Right. The previous one was good.
I really liked the first one.
This was
the previous one.
This was not nearly as good as the previous one. And most of the things that were good were when they did a bit from the previous one again. Mm. The only real nice addition is that Danny Glover gets dropped into the Kevin Hart character, and so Kevin Hart
plays
a slow talking old man the whole time, and that's an entertaining
amusing.
Change of
that
pace.
Does.
and I want to briefly mention Spies in Disguise.
Did you see this?
Yes.
Okay.
The animated film with Tom Holland and Will Smith.
Oh.
Because it was pretty good. Like, yeah. It's
the
not.
The trailer was charming, but people keep making fun of this movie.
No, it's not the best thing of the year, but I was like, no, wait. It's charming and nice, and it has a message about nonviolence, and it has a great voice cast, and lots of really good pigeon humor. I love birds.
Pigeon humor.
Every aspect of bird behavior.
I didn't
is...
know that you love birds.
Me either. I do love
Maybe
birds.
That's why we're friends, because I have a bird name.
You have a... Oh, yeah, that's right.
This is news to you?
I don't associate...
Robin, are you an only child?
I associate... The five letters Robin more with you than with the bird a Robin.
That's wonderful.
Because they're not a very interesting bird.
Okay. Maybe not to people who aren't named Robin.
Shit just got real.
Spies in Disguise is fine. Shall we pick a movie?
Yes.
For the first time in a long time, anyone could veto this. Any one of the three of us could say nope.
So excited.
The number is 1192, and it's late in the alphabet.
Boy.
Next up is, I have to do this.
You're vetoing?
No.
Oh.
This is a secondary use of the alarm sound. There are two potential alarm sounds. One is a veto. The other is this thing we addressed briefly.
Yes.
Where there's now like two dozen movies in the list that, because of the Box Office Mojo redesign, are listed as a number one movie in America, but probably weren't. They just like have incomplete data, so they have like this one little thing from this one week.
Oh,
and it's like number one, and this is one of those. The movie is from 1979, and it's called Voices.
Oh boy!
Anybody? No. Anybody? Voices is a 1979 film directed by Robert Markowitz and starring Michael Ancine. So I'm on board because he's a Twin Peaks actor, and Amy Irving, a young deaf woman. A dream of becoming a dancer. Now, the rule we established was if we land on one of these, because it probably wasn't an actual number one, it's free veto. A lot of the ones that are on the list for this reason are interesting, and so I want to keep them in there.
I mean, like, I will watch this movie.
What's it called? Because I don't even see it on IMDb.
Voices from 1979.
Also, it's something it says when you Google it is box office, $1 million USD, and then in parentheses, U.S. rentals.
So
what does that even mean?
This is even more definitely not a number one movie.
I feel like
in America.
We should be picking a different movie.
Yeah, this seems like a...
If our species conquers death and we all live for 1,000 years and we actually do all of these movies, one day we'll watch Voices. I don't think that day is today. If we could even find it. All right, re-roll. I'm leaving Voices on there in case it comes up again and we go, you know what, if Tony Goldwyn wants us that badly to watch Voices.
I mean, I might Rocky three it. We'll see how busy I get.
It's the holidays. No one's watching Voices.
I'm not that busy over the holidays. I'm Jewish.
That's true. I can't tell you.
I didn't even know that.
I can't. Tony Goldwyn is smiling on us. I can't tell you how much better it got.
Oh, good.
All right.
Instead of watching a box office bomb that no one's ever heard of, we're watching Speed.
Yes! I was literally thinking about Speed in the elevator at work today because it got stuck like it always does.
And the guy, Tony Goldwyn, has smiled down upon Robin.
Yeah. Thank you, Tony.
I'm so happy. I don't think I've seen it. Like, I think I saw it, you know, in the 90s.
Yeah.
This was the first R-rated movie I saw in the theaters.
Aww.
And what a nice, this is our Sandy B period as we're exploring Sandra Bullock's early career.
And also, this is our first visit
Keanu?
To Keanu Dome.
It is. I can't wait to hear the gush on this one.
Yes.
Man. Well played, everyone. Let's,
yay.
This is good.
This is a good one.
I'm so happy. I mean, listen, it could have gone, if it went one in the other direction, we could have been watching Speed 2. That would have been bad news.
Compared to whatever this Voices was, I think I would have been okay with it.
If anyone knows anything about Voices from 1979, let us know.
I can't find any information on the internet.
I marked all of these earlier today. Like, this is so pointless. We're never actually going to land on one. That's
Tony Goldwyn. This is
what Tony Goldwyn taketh away, and then he giveth Speed. Will pop quiz asshole. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
And the song.
Yeah. What? You thought in year two I would start remembering? It's not a song anymore. We're switching
to
album.
Right. Oh, God, this is going to be so hard for me.
And the jury's still out on whether or not this works. Maximum Risk was the number one movie in America, September 13th, 1996. The following day, what album was crowned the number one album in America?
Again?
September of 1996.
Was it a Celine Dion?
No, I think she took the title back a few weeks later.
TLC?
TLC, I think, was the previous year.
Okay.
Fugees. Celine Dion's Falling Into You would reclaim the title 3 weeks later.
Mariah
Fugees
Carey.
Was earlier this year. Yeah, to always guess Mariah Carey.
I mean, come on.
No, Mariah Carey was the beginning of the year.
Boys to Men.
No, in fact, it is a rock act.
What?
Mm-hmm.
See, this is what's so confusing.
Right.
This was a bad one to start with.
A rock act in 96.
Bush?
No, they took it later that year. You're all around it. This is one of
Pearl
the
Jam?
One correct.
Pearl Jam?
But you won't get it. It's the album No Code. It is one
I
of the lesser.
What? They put out so many records.
I know one song, right. Jeremy.
It's a good one.
No, this was one. This was the one after they started beefing with Ticketmaster. So they were like, "We're going on tour, but no one. You can't get tickets unless you go to a very specific building."
Where
and
there's
then
a guy named Tony, and he's wearing a red poncho.
And then they put out an album with no hits, which did go to number one, but it didn't have a hit. So it's like, we're going to make it hard for you to see us play the songs you don't like.
Oh, Eddie.
No Code?
No Code is okay. The name of the album. It was,
if you say so.
Pearl Jam's fourth studio album. It's after Vitalogy, and we might switch back to songs.
Okay.
Number one.